Everybody, this is Kelly. I just wanted to check in with everyone, see how you're all doing. We're in quarantine right now, so we are not recording together, so these next few episodes will be just me. I'm super excited for the next episode. It's probably going to be the best episode we've ever done. I'm super excited. That's why it's taking me so long to put a new one out. In the meantime, though, I'm going to just cover an episode that we had done in October on our Facebook Live. Some of you, you know, came and you watched that live with us, but for those that don't know, we covered John Wayne Gacy. I'm sure many of you know who he is. He dressed up as Pogo the Clown, and he was just not a good guy. So, yeah, let's just get started. Okay, so John Wayne Gacy was born on March 17th, 1942, to auto repair machinist and World War I veteran John Stanley Gacy and homemaker Marion Elaine Robinson. He was the second child and had two sisters. He had a horrible childhood. His father was an alcoholic and severely abusive towards his wife and children. As with most abused children, Gacy wanted nothing more than to please his father. His earliest childhood memory of his father is being beaten at 4 years old. His father beat him with a belt for accidentally disarranging his car engine components that his father had just assembled. Another time, his father beat him with a broomstick until he was unconscious. At 6 years old, Gacy stole a toy truck from a store that he was at with his mother. When she found out, she made him return it to the store and then told his father, who beat him with his belt as punishment. After that, she protected Gacy from his father, but that just made him angry, and he began to call him a sissy, mama's boy, and that he would probably grow up to be, and I'm sorry for this, queer. In 1949, Gacy was caught molesting a young girl. As punishment, his father beat him with a razor strop. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, so I'm just going to explain it. So, a razor strop would be the strip of leather that barbers would use to sharpen their straight razors. He was also molested by a family friend repeatedly, but he never said anything out of fear that he would be blamed. Gacy began having, had many health problems. He had a heart condition, experienced blackouts, and had seizures. In fourth grade, his appendix burst. Between the ages of 14 and 18, Gacy spent almost a full year in the hospital, though his father accused him of faking his illnesses. It is worth noting that, aside from the burst appendix, none of his health conditions have ever been definitively diagnosed. In 1960, at 18 years old, John Gacy became involved in politics. He worked as an assistant precinct captain for a Democratic Party candidate. His father called him a patsy for this decision. At the same time, Gacy got the job working in politics. His father bought him a car on the condition that Gacy repay him every month and that the title would remain in his father's name until it was paid off. This meant that his father would take Gacy's keys or distributor cap whenever his father was angry. The final time his father removed the distributor cap, as soon as it was returned, Gacy immediately packed up and drove to Vegas. There he began working for an ambulance service before working for the Palm Mortuary. He worked as a mortician for 3 months before going back to Chicago to be with his family. Apparently, while working as a mortuary attendant, he would live in the mortuary, and one evening he was alone with the dead body of a deceased teenage male. He climbed into the coffin with the body and began to cuddle and caress it. This freaked him out, so he called his mother, who convinced him to return home. Upon his return home, Gacy enrolled in the Northwestern Business College and graduated in 1963. After that, he took up a management trainee position at the Nunn Shoe Company. In 1964, the company transferred him to Springfield, Illinois to work as a salesman. Eventually, he was promoted to manager. In March of that year, he became engaged to Marilyn Myers, who worked in the department that Gacy managed. They were married in September 1964 and moved to Waterloo, Iowa, to manage the KFCs that Marilyn's father owned. While the couple were still engaged, though, Gacy joined the local JCs. He worked his butt off to be named key man in 1964. It was during this time that Gacy had his second homosexual experience. One of his fellow JCs got Gacy drunk one night, and the friend invited Gacy to stay on his couch. The friend then performed oral sex on the drunk Gacy. In 1966, Gacy agreed to manage the KFCs for his father-in-law, bringing home about $15,000 a year, which, if you count inflation, that would equal to $118,783 a year. Gacy joined the Waterloo JCs, working extra hours on top of the 12 to 14 hour days he worked managing the restaurants. In 1967, he was named outstanding vice president of the Waterloo JCs. Marilyn gave birth to two children, Michael, born in 1966, and Christine in 1967. It seemed that now he had the approval of his father. In July 1966, Gacy's parents came to a visit. During a private moment, the older John apologized for the physical and emotional abuse he inflicted on his son. His father proudly told him, "Son, I was wrong about you." However, there was a side to the JCs in Waterloo that many people didn't see. Wife swapping, prostitution, pornography, and drug use were just some of the things the JCs took part in, and Gacy was no different. He regularly cheated on Marilyn with local prostitutes and even opened up a club in his basement for the employees at the KFCs he managed to drink and play pool. He mainly hung out with his teenage male employees, plying them with alcohol before making sexual advances towards them. When the boys refused his advances, he would claim that they were just jokes or tests of their morals. John's run-ins with the law started in 1968. He was arrested on felony charges for attempting to coerce a male employee into homosexual acts. At this time, he and Marilyn had only been married for 2 years. Obviously, she and the town were shocked. He was such a well-respected member of society. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison for sodomy and sent to Iowa State Men's Reformatory in Anamosa. After he was sentenced, his wife filed for divorce, and Gacy told her he never wanted to see her or the children again. After 18 months in prison, Gacy was released in 1971 after being paroled. After his release, he moved back to Chicago and got a job as a construction contractor before opening his own construction business. That following July, he remarried a recently divorced woman he had met through a mutual friend, Carol Hoft. With some financial help from his mother, he moved into a home in Des Plaines. But his legal troubles were only just starting. As with most rapists, he reoffended. In February 1971, Gacy was charged with the attempted rape of a young man. However, the charges were dropped when the victim did not show up to his hearing. Gacy was known by local merchants to undercut his business rivals' contracts by hiring high school boys to cut his business costs, which allowed his business to thrive. During this time, Gacy began to host elaborate block parties where he dressed up as Pogo the Clown. He would even visit the local children's hospital in full clown getup to lift the spirits of the sick children. Honestly, it was terrifying seeing those photos. I know that other professional clowns have looked at his photo of him in his Pogo costume, and they have said that everything about that costume is wrong. The makeup lines were sharp and not rounded, which has a very sinister effect and something that you're not supposed to do as a party clown. You're supposed to be as happy and inviting as possible, and when you have those sharp lines, it's not. He immersed himself into his local JC and Democratic Party. He even had his photo taken with First Lady Rosalynn Carter, before becoming Democratic precinct captain. Gacy's second marriage also ended in divorce in March of 1976. She said in the book titled Fall of the House of Gacy by Harlan Mendenhall that she no longer felt like she could cope with Gacy's unpredictable moods and bizarre obsession with homosexual magazines. Thankfully, they had no children. In July 1975, Gacy's employee, 18-year-old John Butkovich, went missing after having an argument with Gacy over back pay that Butkovich was owed. Butkovich's parents begged the police to investigate Gacy, but nothing came of it. In January 1977, 19-year-old John Szyk went missing. He was an acquaintance of Gacy and John Carter that year, one of Gacy's employees who was caught driving John Szyk's car after stealing gas from a gas station. When police spoke to Gacy, he said that John had sold him the car before leaving town. The police let it go. After Szyk's disappearance, Gacy hired 18-year-old employee David Cram to dig out a crawl space in Gacy's basement. David stayed in Gacy's spare room at the time. One night, David came home to find Gacy drunk, wearing his clown costume. They spent the evening drinking before Gacy tricked David into a pair of handcuffs. Gacy began to spin David around the room by the handcuffs, screaming, "I'm going to rape you." David was able to break free of Gacy's hold, grab a set of keys, and fled to his room. In March 1978, Gacy lured 27-year-old Jeffrey Rignall into his car. Gacy chloroformed the man, then took him back to his house where Gacy raped and tortured him before dumping him in Lincoln Park. Jeffrey survived, but the only thing he could remember through the haze of the chloroform was a black Oldsmobile. The Kennedy Expressway, and some side streets. Rignall sat on the expressway until he saw the Oldsmobile and followed it to Gacy's home at 8213 West Summerdale. Police issued a warrant and Gacy was arrested on July 15th for battery, but was released on bail while waiting for his trial. In December 1977, a 19-year-old man went to police saying that Gacy kidnapped him at gunpoint before raping him. Yet again, the police did nothing. On December 11th, 1978, a 15-year-old boy named Robert Peast was disappeared from the Des Plaines pharmacy he worked at. Before he disappeared, Robert told a coworker that he was going to a house down the street to talk to some contractor about a job. Gacy had been in the pharmacy that night talking to the pharmacy owner about a remodeling job. Gacy denied talking to Robert when the police called him the next day. However, unlike the Chicago police, the Des Plaines police decided to check into Gacy's background. When they saw that Gacy had spent time in prison for forced sodomy on a teenage boy, they got a search warrant for Gacy's house. Police executed the search warrant on Gacy's property on December 13, 1978. They found a 1975 high school class ring, other people's driver's licenses, handcuffs, a 2x4 with holes drilled into the ends, a syringe, clothing too small for Gacy, and a photo receipt from the pharmacy Robert worked. Detectives also noticed a foul smell coming from the new crawl space in Gacy's basement. However, the search warrant did not cover that part of the house, so they had to get a second search warrant. While they waited for the second search warrant, police learned about Gregory's disappearance. They traced the rings to John Szyk, and Carol told them about John Butkovich's disappearance. On December 12, 1978, one of Gacy's employees told police that Gacy had admitted to him that Gacy had murdered more than 30 people. After that, Gacy was arrested on marijuana charges. It was at that time the police were able to get their second search warrant. After investigating, they found multiple human bones. After he found out about his pending murder charges, Gacy opened up. He confessed to killing 25 to 30 people. Most were buried in the crawl space and other parts of his property. After he ran out of space in the crawl space, he dumped the last 5 bodies off the I-55 bridge into the Des Plaines River. Robert Peast was the last body he dumped. He even drew a diagram of his crawl space of where the bodies were buried for the police. Gacy told police he would either pick up male runaways or male prostitutes off the street or take them by force. He would often lure them with money. He would take them to his home and handcuff or tie them in any way he could. He would then stick clothing in his into the man's mouth to muffle their screams before using ropes or boards to strangle them while he sexually assaulted them. He would then keep the bodies with him upstairs until decomposition started to advance. The police searched his property for 4 months. 29 bodies were found in Gacy's crawlspace and the rest of the property between December 1978 and March 1979. Gacy's youngest victims were 14-year-old Samuel Stapleton and Michael Marino. Russell Nelson and James Mazzara were 21 years old and Gacy's oldest murder victims. 8 of the victims were so badly decomposed they were never identified. Robert Peast's body was found April 9, 1979, on the banks of the Des Plaines River. On February 6, 1980, Gacy's trial in Chicago began. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity, but the judge immediately rejected it. Gacy's lawyer, Sam Amirante, claimed that he had moments of insanity during the murders, but was lucid during the luring and disposal of the bodies. Gacy treated the whole thing as a joke, though. On the stand, he joked that the only thing he was guilty of was running a cemetery without a license. His lawyers even tried to say that all 33 murders were accidental as part of erotic asphyxiation. But the Cook County coroner had evidence that Gacy's claim was impossible. Also, his earlier confession was used as evidence and could not be suppressed. He was found guilty and given the death penalty on March 13, 1980. On May 10, 1994, John Wayne Gacy was executed by the lethal injection at Stateville Correction Center at 52 years old. His final meal consisted of a dozen deep-fried shrimp, a bucket of original recipe chicken from KFC, a pound of fresh strawberries, and French fries. His execution had large crowds of people with vendors selling Gacy-related merchandise. There were numerous arrests for public intoxication, open container violations, and disorderly conduct. The crowd cheered the moment Gacy's death was pronounced. Gacy showed no remorse. His last words to his lawyer in his cell were essentially, "Killing me won't bring anybody back." His last words to the correctional officer who led him to the execution chamber was, "Kiss my ass." His execution was not an easy one. The chemicals used unexpectedly solidified, clogging the IV and preventing any of the chemicals to get inside him. The blinds were pulled, covering the windows so witnesses wouldn't have to see them work on replacing the IV lines. 10 minutes later, the blinds were reopened and the execution resumed. He was pronounced dead 18 minutes later. Anesthesiologists weighed in on the matter. They blamed the prison officials They said that the prison officials were inexperienced, saying that proper procedures taught in IV 101 would have prevented that error. Due to this, Illinois adopted a different method of lethal injection. Chief prosecutor of Gacy's trial, William Kunkel, felt zero remorse for the IV Bessup, though. William said he still got a much easier death than any of his victims. Gacy's brain was removed and given to Dr. Helen Morrison. She inspects the brains of serial killers to see if their brains have any abnormalities. She also interviews them before their deaths to see if they have any traits similar to sociopathy, which is now called antisocial personality disorder. She found no abnormalities of Gacy's brain. Gacy spent 14 years on death row where he took up oil painting. His favorite things to paint were clowns. He often said his clown act, Pogo the Clown, was his alter ego, even once saying, "A clown can get away with murder." He also painted Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and other serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer and Ed Gein. Most of his paintings were auctioned off after his execution. 19 were put up for sale, starting at $195, which was an acrylic painting of a bird, or up to $9,500. The most expensive painting depicted dwarfs playing baseball against the Chicago Cubs. Some of the paintings were bought just to destroy them. In June 1994, a bonfire to burn 25 of the paintings in Naperville, Illinois, was attended by 300 people, 9 of which were families of the victims. Now, the National Museum of Crime and Punishment exhibits 2 of Gacy's paintings. One painting, called Baseball Hall of Fame, was signed by 46 members of the Baseball Hall of Fame, as well as President Richard Nixon. But none of them were aware that Gacy was the painter. So here's a list of John Wayne Gacy's victims and the day they disappeared. Timothy McCoy, 18, January 3rd, 1972. John Butkovich, 17, July 21st, 1975. Daryl Sampson, 18, April 6th, 1976. Randall Raffet, 15, May 14th, 1976. Sam Stapleton, 14, May 14th, 1976. Michael Bonin, 17, June 3rd, 1976. William Carroll, 16, June 13th, 1976. Rick Johnston, 17, August 6th, 1976. Kenneth Parker, 16, October 25th, 1976. Michael Marino, 14, October 25th, 1976. Gregory Godzik, 17, December 12th, 1976. John Sizek, 19, January 20th, 1977. John Pristich, 20, March 15th, 1977. Matthew Bowman, 19, July 5th, 1977. Robert Gilroy, 18, September 15th, 1977. John Mowry, 19, September 15th, 1977. Russell Nansen, 21, October 17th, 1977. Robert Winch, 16, November 10th, 1977. Tommy Bowling, 20, November 18th, 1977. David Talsma, 19, December 9th, 1977. William Kindred, 19, February 16th, 1977. Timothy O'Rourke, 20, June 1978. That one did not have a date. Frank Landingen, 19, November 4th, 1978. James Mazzara, 21, November 24th, 1978. Robert Peast, 15, December 11th, 1978. Eight of the victims were never identified, and it is believed that there may have been more victims who were either never identified or found who were buried in other locations. The ninth unidentified body, 959 UMIL, was identified in June 2007 as Timothy McCoy. Timothy was from Nebraska and believed to be Gacy's first known and identified victim. So that's that on John Wayne Gacy. Sorry it wasn't very in-depth. I just felt like I needed to put something out for you guys in the meantime. Keep an eye on the Facebook page. I will be announcing when the new episode will be up. I'm pretty close to being done with all of my research, it's just taking me a lot of time. You know, with everything going on with COVID-19, make sure you guys are staying healthy, practicing safe social distancing, good hand washing, sanitizing any high traffic areas in your home, like light switches, doorknobs, counters, faucets, the toilet, you know, anything that can hold germs. And if you are feeling sick, please, 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 I cannot stress this enough, please stay home. We don't need other people being infected and made sick. But I think that's going to be it for today, guys. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and I'll hear from you soon.